This is Martin Matthews of Reality Sandwich Radio, KPOO San Francisco. I'm here today in the Culture Change Studios, sitting down to catch up with old friend Jan Lundberg. Jan has been on the show several times over the past few years, and he is a former oil industry analyst turned environmental activist since 1988, and he operates the very insightful website culturechange.org. Years ago, he ran the Lundberg Survey, which is the oil industry analysis firm that predicted the second oil shock back in 1979. Recently, Jan completed a climate emergency fast and was on CBS Radio Network speaking about that and about several other leading issues in the climate crisis today. And I'm just happy to catch up with Jan out here in the sunset here in San Francisco at the Culture Change Studios. Good to reconnect with you, Jan.
Thank you, Martin. It's great to be on the show again.
It's been a bit of a while since we had a time to sit down, and the world just continues to just do its thing. And every time I turn, I see more roads being paved and more gas being sucked up and prices going through the roof, and the world just seems to be spinning and spinning and spinning as if nothing is going on. And I see movies out, of course, Al Gore's movie Inconvenient Truth. There's another movie out about the 11th hour, and seemingly more public awareness about the climate crisis, yet more blatant government denial, more ignorance on the part of the oil industry trying to tell us otherwise. We have a fascinating article here on CNN.com that's actually from the former firm that you operated that's now being operated by your sister Trilby. I'll have some quotes on that. Real propaganda from the oil industry. So I want to just connect with you. What are you seeing in the climate change crisis? What's going on out there? And please tell us a bit about your recent climate emergency fast. Sounds really quite compelling.
Sure, Martin. This is a time of very rapid and deep change, but day to day it's kind of hard to see it. So the pressure is on just to keep on doing what we're doing and pay those bills and keep consuming and hope that the economy will keep going and that we won't have major disruption. But we have a couple of things happening that are extremely serious and that are bringing about change no matter what we do at this point. The climate is spinning out of control, and we may get to a place shortly that hasn't been seen on the planet for 55 million years. A sudden shift could result. In the area of petroleum consumption, yes, we're consuming like there's more tomorrow, but we have peaked globally in oil consumption. I'm sorry, in oil extraction. And what this means is that peak oil will usher in great changes. We won't have the unlimited growth that we've seen. So we can keep buying gasoline and using petroleum in its many forms, such as plastics and power for power plants and many other purposes. But we are going to see some incredible economic and social disruption from the consequences of passing the peak, and the oil market will be taking care of the havoc much more than the geological fact of peak oil as soon as we get to that point. And we are seeing the pressure build as prices get over $80 a barrel. And yet we have our ecosystem and nature to worry about the most, because if you don't have planetary health, just like if you don't have personal health, there is no future, and your present becomes increasingly miserable. So to answer your question about the climate emergency fast, I went 23 days on just water, and it was a great cleansing. And I'd like to think that it's a useful exercise, because we need to take a fast in general from fossil fuels, and also when we may have a real problem with the unlimited amount of food we've been shipping in, and the average price of a piece of food in this country goes 1,500 miles, when we have the point where the trucks aren't pulling into Safeway and your local food stores, then what? people in this country aren't familiar with fasting whatsoever. They don't know that they can miss a meal or a day's eating.
Well, let's stop and clarify a couple of things. I'm really liking the idea of the notion of a fast. It's conjuring up a lot of thoughts in my mind about what it means to take a fast or to take a break from constant consumption of something. Yeah, it brings our attention to the nature of our reality being that of constant consumers and the need to constantly be bringing energy in order to be able to expend it and have the life that we do. And when we think of the planet as a collective organism, the thing that serves us most by way of creating energy so that we can do all these things is fossil fuels, is cheap oil. Yeah, and
right, and petroleum is how we're fed. Petroleum farming for the fertilizers, the pesticides, the tractor fuels, etc. Then we're distributing the food, we're packaging the food and preparing the food with petroleum for the most part. This is not sustainable, and so our population has swelled. And it turns out that the land can't support this many people. So we're using this ancient energy source up from the ground that happens to be warming the climate as well.
And happens to be in limited supply. I mean, even though we've had oil and for 100 years or so, right, there's not unlimited amount in the earth, and we're reaching a point where we can't pull any more out of the ground that in order to meet the amount that we're consuming every day. Is that right?
Exactly. And the meaning of this is that it's not that oil will stop being down there in the ground, but when you can't accommodate economic growth as we've known it, and when oil operations yield less and less, we have some great changes ahead of us. It has been said erroneously that the peak in oil extraction means that we enter the second half of the age of oil. Well, it's not necessarily true. Just as the Stone Age didn't end for lack of stones, we're going to be seeing a time when the oil won't be available at the gasoline station, and that there are going to be problems with natural gas as well, meeting needs for heating, for air conditioning, for growing food. So this is a terrible crisis. Taking a fast from that and experiencing what's going to be a new sustainable culture someday, not too far off, experiencing that now, bringing it about now, and disengaging from the system of being a consumer and being an isolated member of society who's good for producing only. This is something to question and to get away from now. And fortunately, there are alternative ways of living.
I don't think we ever thought that, though. I mean, we are happily addicted to oil. It works for us, even though there are some very deleterious behaving pushers of our addictive substance across the planet that are making us pay high prices just out of opportunistic desire and need to maximize their profit and take advantage of the public's need for oil. And but I think whenever we get in this conversation, Jan, I just find that, I wonder if listeners are thinking, it's never been different. I can't even imagine it being different, that you're asking me to even think about it being different is really unsettling. It's very unsettling. But then again, I have to say, if you're listening and thinking that, look around at where we are in our world today. Things seem to be quite tedious in multiple arenas with respect to the health of life. The planet isn't doing very well. We've had all kinds of climate issues sneaking up all over the place. We have information about melting global ice caps. We have weird weather occurring around
the
world.
It's worse than tedious. It's tenuous and scary. And we've brought this about through the march of Western civilization and the dominant culture. And we will be seeing some incredible changes, and that's why we publish culturechange.org. And we also will be doing more music here at Culture Change Studios, eco-rock, you might say. But I would like to simply chime in that the scary trends going on and the direction we seem to be heading in with the endless war to prop up our our wasteful lifestyle and to keep the population and economy growing and paving over more farmland and driving species extinct, melting the ice caps. All of this is a failed strategy that really has no future. So we need to bring about the real future now. And it's very difficult to get the word out there. That's why we're very lucky to have KPOO and speak about these things. And I'll be glad to talk more about the fast and why I wanted to get on some of these news outlets like CBS Radio Network because of this interesting article on CNN.com where I think my sister would definitely have to be called the black sheep of the family with views like this.
Well, here on Reality Sandwich, it's our intention to share with people, you know, keen insights about the nature of our reality, our collective reality, as it is affecting our individual reality, hence how it is affecting our very life and our ability to thrive and be happy and co-create with others. And we have an open forum to speak about that and to share anything we want to hear on listener-supported radio. And as you know, Jan, because you've been with me on the air here for the past several years talking about peak oil, talking about these issues, I want to ask you, how were you received over on CBS Radio? How were they? Were you talking about all these issues? How was it over there on mainstream?
Well, it was recorded on September 20th and aired the next day. Dan Revive was the reporter, and it was very kind of him to be concerned and interested about the climate emergency fast and how I was doing. And we talked about some of the background of the family that used to run this firm that had been started by my father. And since it was CBS, I mentioned to him that my father and Eric Severide covered the opening of the United Nations here in San Francisco 50 years ago. They were roommates. And so we chatted, and he did the recording, and I had given him a little background that my family was raised on fasting, and my brother and sister, and well, both my brothers and sisters were raised on fasting. So I didn't hear the broadcast, but some friends did, and I understand he said that this is a family that knows about fasting. And I was glad to talk about climate emergency and about peak oil, and that we have plastics in our bodies. And I think this kind of alarm ringing is necessary. It is doom and gloom sounding, but it is a great thing to detoxify and improve your health, and also to talk about the alternatives to guzzling petroleum. And one of the points I made is that we can go car-free. Now, that's great for the pocketbook, great for your health. It's more social not to have a car. And plenty of people pushing the use of cars and gasoline with corporate advertising and sponsoring of shows, the dominant media. And our culture is about having material things where you can have the so-called freedom of all these things we can buy, but it really isn't freedom.
Well, not when we're as dependent upon it as we clearly are. And let's take a look just now at some of this major propaganda being put out here on CNN.com website. There's an interview here with Trilby Lundberg. This is from CNN.com, pulled it down from their website just... looks like just a couple of days ago, an interview with her, chatting with America's gas survey maven. Trilby Lundberg is publisher of the Lundberg Survey, a national survey of gas prices quoted regularly by major news organizations, including CNN. So that's your sister. She's running the family organization now. They're still big time in the oil industry analysis, yeah?
We don't call it a family and it's business anymore.
No longer would it
does,
used to
it
be.
Does bear our name, and it's... I used to say it was great when she got the publicity about gasoline price changes because, after all, it is my name, too. But what you're holding in your hand there is of major concern to people who are concerned about our use of petroleum and the state of our climate. And I'm looking for the date on here. I think this was aired, not run off the internet, but I think it was appeared in early late August, perhaps.
Mm.
But go ahead, Martin. I don't want to sidetrack.
Well, what really struck me that I feel very compelled to share with our listeners is the extremity of the viewpoint that's being propagated and put out by entities like this. We've talked in the past about the major propaganda put out by the pharmaceutical industry and then, of course, by our government to have us believe certain things and to take such an extreme viewpoint as to muddy our minds about the nature of reality. So in this brief news report here with Trilby Lundberg, one of the questions that she was asked was regarding conservation of fossil fuels and what are the trends that she's been seeing. Now, mind you, she is considered an expert by the news media and by mainstream on this subject. So she's asked, as far as conservation, what are the trends that you're seeing? And she says, and I quote here from her answer, "I'm hoping that consumers will see through the rhetoric about consuming less, demanding less, as faulty. It is not a given that consuming less will be good for our economy or for personal freedom. It is not even established for our environment that we should deprive ourselves of gasoline for our personal mobility as well as our commerce. And to suppose that it is good to do that and pretend that we have a consensus and put our heads together to deprive ourselves of this great product that makes the country go around, commercially and individually, I think is flawed. I'm hoping consumers and voters will see through that and be able to ignore some of the most extreme suggestions." And then Trilby Lundberg goes on to say in this article, "I think that there has been friendly as well as unfriendly brainwashing taking place. And when I say friendly and unfriendly, I'm talking about decades of extremist views that have now achieved mainstream acceptance. And the number one item among those affecting current oil politics in Washington is the boogeyman, also known as global warming."
Ooh,
global warming. So she's vilifying in this article the anybody who's saying anything about what we speak about here as the nature of our reality, and the nature of reality simply being what we're observing, what we're noticing, what we're intuiting in our senses and our taking in of knowledge and information in our world. And I think we're all seeing that oil is at $80 a barrel, and I think we're all seeing that there's wacky stuff going on with the planet. I think we're all kind of seeing and noticing that. Yet we've got folks like this who apparently are experts about what's really happening, giving us such extreme antithetical perspectives. I have to read the last paragraph from her quote here. Again, this is Trilby Lundberg, publisher of the Lundberg Survey, a national survey of gas price, and she's quoted regularly in the mainstream media, including CNN. And she goes on to say that, "I don't accept it as established fact, nor do I accept it that it would be caused by petroleum consumption, nor do I accept that the human species should not affect its environment. So even if we were someday to be shown to have a small effect on the environment, I see no crime. In fact, taking into account the many, many millions of people around the world that envy our way of life, it would seem more humanitarian to wish them the kind, plentiful petroleum products and vehicles that we enjoy, to lift themselves out of the backward, poor way of life." She's such a humanitarian to simply say, take this perspective here, that others should have the freedom and the way of life that we have, and it's not a problem that humans are affecting and destroying, as we're measuring, the environment.
She believes she's paid to say these things. Of course, the science, humans affecting the climate is beyond reproach. The idea of being happy to consume the maximum amount of petroleum, this is something that certainly flies in the face of reality, because other countries will never be able to reach U.S. Consumption levels. This is an extremely misleading and unfortunate and discredited, ridiculous assertion.
So what's going on with global consumption? I mean, last time we spoke, China was increasing by 10-something% per year their global consumption of oil. I mean, the rest of the world was as we say, trying to catch up to us. And even though we all know that that's never really going to happen as far as, you know, per capita consumption of fossil fuels, but are we seeing that trend increase right now? Is the rest of the world upping their...
Well, not actually. The whole world has not been able to get past the 86 million barrels per day of oil being burned and spilled in this country. So we've got sort of a maximum plateau here. It doesn't look like we've stalled because economic activity is high, economic growth continues, but it is maxed out. And a lot of statistics that are generated tend to hide what's really going on. It has been ascertained that people are working harder for less money and that the money is worth less. People are unable to spend enough time with their families in modern society and in this industrialized, mechanical, and computerized world. So the quality of life goes down. The poisoning of the planet in our bodies goes down. It keeps going up. So when we have these kinds of situations that are, you know, depriving us of a good way of life and of our health, and people are dying in the Middle East from violence generated by this highly oil-consumptive way of life, then obviously it has to be questioned. Now, one may assume that I'm a social activist. I'm an environmental activist, but I think we have to be realistic about the idea of reforming this system and somehow putting the brakes on war and getting a president elected or a Congress elected that will actually do something about global warming and our consumption of non-renewable resources. But those concerns being valid, I think the main factors to look at are that we have an economy that has been overextended and will collapse. And culturechange.org had a recent article on the overextension of the American way of life, which is unsustainable. And the kind of situation brewing where we'll just have to run into these limits without any way of making an adjustment to continue the status quo. So it has to do with our petroleum consumption and the state of the climate. So you have a collapsing economy that has begun, and that's partly a financial disaster because we've had weaknesses in the financial markets. But we also have nature unraveling, and there's a saying by the Earth Firsters, nature bats last. So we're going to be paying and experiencing this vast change in our way of life. And it's not all bad because when the dust settles out of the rubble, we'll just have to get along and deal with our local environment, grow food locally, start working together and knowing our neighbors. And this is the kind of culture change that we can look forward to, those of us who are left standing. But meanwhile, there's so much to do to try to make our own environment more sustainable and to mitigate the shocks of what I call petro-collapse and of climate chaos. So what can we do? Well, there's depaving, there's food not lawns, there's getting bikes hooked up with bike carts, and there's getting together to collaborate and share skills. So these are futures that work in urban or rural settings. So it's going to be a very interesting time, and it's going to happen in our lifetimes rather soon, I believe.
Well, it definitely seems like something is going on. I mean, we can't just continue down this road of incessant consumption and ignoring what's actually showing up as a result of the behaviors we've been engaging in all this time. I mean, if you keep throwing the garbage out your front lawn, eventually it's going to pile up and you're going to have some sort of an issue. When we look around at the planet and how we're treating the globe and how we're treating each other and how we're just printing money left, right, and center, eventually something is going to break. And we're beginning to see that all over the place. What are some of the signs that you're seeing as far as kind of a crack in this global armor as far as, you know, more significant signs that either climate crisis about to hit us over the head. Because, you know, when things are just either in the media or, you know, you hear about it or it's not really affecting you personally.
Well,
right?
people are starting to feel it. They're seeing things. But it is true that you have to pay attention and you have to read between the lines with the mainstream corporate media and get your own information over the internet or through word of mouth. So, yes, the climate is unraveling, and this affects growing seasons. It's going to affect water, snowpack, melting faster and not building up enough. These are great issues. It's been predicted that large areas of the middle of continents, inland areas, will be terribly drought-stricken, and we're going to have more intense storms and sea levels rising. And if the when we should say that the Greenland ice sheet and the West Antarctica ice shelf, when those fall into the sea, each one can generate a greater than 20 feet sudden sea level rise, with tsunamis going the speed of jet planes. So this is different from what we read from the IPCC reports on climate change and sea level rise. So this is not a time just to continue our petroleum consumption, nor is it a time to keep sacrificing our health so that we can get ahead and make more money tomorrow so that we can buy our way and shop our way to a greener future that'll have unlimited renewable energy. Yeah. So these are things to question. And I did a lot of that on my 23-day fast of just water, and I would just like to rave about it being a very healthy experience. There's an article on our website about this, culturechange.org, and we link to a fasting medical clinic. And Herbert Shelton is an author that people can learn about fasting from. So since we have a theme of healthful living so much on this show, I just wanted to say that we need to heal ourselves collectively and with the planet and individually. You can't get health out of a bottle or from pills or from surgery. It's really the body that does our healing, just like we can't get solutions to the climate problem and the energy problem by just going out and purchasing it. We have to deal with personal change. We have to slash petroleum consumption, just like we have to slash the toxins going into our bodies. And what happens during a fast is when you give the digestive system a break, you go into maximum healing mode. And so you eliminate the toxins. It's not very pleasant sometimes, but you go through that entire cycle, and it's a very short experience for a young person, but it takes much longer for an older or larger person. But once it's done, and the time goes by anyway, you've had quite a rest, and it can be very meditative. And when you're finished with it, you have a lot more energy. And I may sound a little ragged right now. I've just been running around in circles using up this energy I've built up. Once again, it's such a privilege and a great honor to be on Reality Sandwich on KPOO-FM.
Well, since we're speaking about the fast and health just now, as you so eloquently have segued, you mentioned to me beforehand that you've been fasting all of your life. This has been a lifelong way of being for you. Yeah.
Well, yes. The family was raised on it. That and organic food and a lot of outdoor living is really all we used. We avoided doctors and pills and hospitals, and it's served me very well. I think I'm one of the few family members still observing and using the tool of fasting. And so it's a wonderful thing to be raised with, because then you're not afraid of something that sounds scary. And in this country, as you know, people are really not expected to heal themselves. They're told that they have to go to the doctor and take tests, and then they might get some medicine. But the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry have been inventing new diseases with new petrochemical drugs to cure them. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of valid medical science which can be very, very helpful. And of course, that's what you need. But when you have symptoms of ill health that are from internal causes and environmental causes, those symptoms must not be suppressed. And that's what, unfortunately, the medical approach is about. So recognizing symptoms as a healing crisis
right.
is a very good way to go to cleanse oneself and rejuvenate and gather strength.
Well, and certainly the planet needs that, yeah? I mean, if you think about the planet as a collective living organism, which it is, it's been having to deal with our human existence for a long, long time, and we've been messing with things. We've been putting elements together in certain ways that they're not intended. We've been dumping stuff into the water. We've been messing with a lot of the other animals that are living here, and collectively the planet physically is weird, you know, getting worse for wear. Meanwhile, our human intelligence is wiring itself through the internet and massive media, and we're getting all this knowledge about our existence here and about how we're affecting things. One would hope that the natural evolution of us as a collective organism would be to apply that intelligence in ways that made sense in order to help us use that to affect our environment to a positive regard so that we all can thrive together rather than be stuck in this ignorance that we're in, this ignorance that we read here in this article about we should just, you know, ignore the fact that we're messing with the environment, that we're killing off species, that that rates of cancer and all sorts of things across the globe are just, you know, going through the roof, that we have all these connections between the degradation of the environment and our ill health. We should just ignore those and say, hey, it's great that we can drive our car down to the mall. And that's what life is about.
Well, you've described the situation of more information and using our intelligence, and I'm awfully glad that you got into the real wisdom part of it, because that's what we need. We're inundated with information, with technology, and this has become the God, and science has become God for so many people these days. But where are the traditions that got us by for millennia with a stable population size and a clean environment? When you bring that up, sometimes people say, oh, tribes are just savage, violent institutions that would have destroyed the planet if they only had the technology to do it. Well, we've got to take the good from the past and the useful from the present and create a future that is livable, and question the direction we've been going in.
I think we should talk a little bit more about that in the second half of the show. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about where is our wisdom, how can we apply it, and how can we use our own personal conscious intelligence to make sense of the world and act in a better way for all of us. Let's take a bit of a break, and we'll be right back.
Some purple mountains and tea. Free is we.
That was a song called Schoolmaster by Jan's old band, The DePavers. I'm back here with Jan Lundberg, former oil industry analyst turned environmental activist since 1988, and we're talking today about our changing global environment and global climate change and just various topics about the nature of our reality. Before we went to the break, Jan, we were just talking about wisdom, about applying our knowledge, about applying what we've been learning about what's going on in our world and using that intentionally to help co-create a better way in some regard. So what are you seeing out there as far as people taking action to defend nature in some regard? You were telling me a little bit earlier about some tree sitting going on in Berkeley and food, not lawns. So what's happening out there?
Sure. Well, I think instead of a technological fix for what we perceive as our problems today, it's going to be people power in concert. And that means getting together, as we always did in our whole human evolution, in community. That means tribes. We're talking about people getting to know their neighbors, restoring the environment. We've built so many roads and so many parking lots and buildings and have used industrial petroleum agriculture to destroy the soil, that we have a long way to go to restore the land, and people are still chopping down ancient trees for profit. And so when you mention tree sitting and wisdom, it's important to protect these trees. And so up in Humboldt, there's a 2,000-year-old tree called Spooner that Pacific Lumber, part of the Maxam empire, wants to chop down. And so people I know are tree sitting in it. They're protecting it, and they run lines to other nearby ancient redwoods so that they can't be cut either. And this is, you know, a drop in the bucket, you might say, but people can learn from this example and start protecting trees in their own neighborhoods, because it's happening all around us. And across the bay from us here, over in Berkeley, the University of California wants to destroy a beautiful, rare oak grove near its stadium so it can expand its athletics department with more technology and underground parking and all that. And so there's been a tree sit operation going there. There's about six or seven platforms that are in this oak grove. And the mandolin player on that song Schoolmaster that we just heard is a very important player in protecting those trees. And people should go by and see the tree sit.
Where can they go in Berkeley?
Well, it's on Piedmont, right near Bancroft. It's just north of the International House. So go there and give a howl of greeting to the tree sitters, and they'll love you for it.
What's Food Not Lawns?
Food Not Lawns is like depaving, but we're talking about biological pavement known as lawns. And so a lot of space and soil is wasted by just being devoted to some monocrop of grass. And
right.
People have to mow it, and they put chemicals on it. But we need this valuable arable land for food production. So we have to stop poisoning it, and we have to start planting things on it. And if there's cars still going by, then my solution up in Humboldt County, where I did it, was to plant potatoes and parsnips, which are at least underground crops, and maybe that was better. But it's all part of the steps we need to take to be more self-sufficient locally and to work with our ecosystem instead of trying to destroy it for profit and sweep it under the rug and import everything.
Right. Is that something people can learn about, Food Not? Is that a program that
you develop? It's actually a book. There's a book by Heather Coburn called Food Not Lawns. And it's just common sense. So you look around your environment. What have you got? If you got a driveway and you don't really need it because you've turned the garage into a den, then maybe your car can park on the street and you can tear up your driveway. And it's very easy. It's a matter of taking a sledgehammer and using a pickaxe and a crowbar and shovels. And a couple of people can depave a small driveway in a couple hours, and you take the pieces of concrete or asphalt, and you can make little fences or walls out of it, or even tables. So that's something that needs to be done, and whole parking lots need to be depaved. Actually, over in Berkeley, Cordonesus Creek, which runs into University Village at the northern border of Berkeley, that was depaved by Richard Register and his friends with Eco City Builders over 10 years ago. And now it's a thriving little ecosystem. There are fish there. The creek was daylighted. Part of 9th Street was taken out. A parking lot was taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we really need to do, and it's a beautiful place. I mean, where would you rather have a picnic, in a parking lot or in a nice little ecosystem with fruit trees and native plants and animals around?
It's a beautiful concept. I mean, we've got space here and there sometimes, and why not use it to grow something? I know when I lived in Japan for a year and a half, and I was in Kyoto, and when you go around the city, and all of a sudden you'll come across, you know, a whole block, and they're growing rice or something, you know, just right there in the middle of the city. It's just part of the way of life is to be growing food and you know, creating.
Well, they're very careful about their space there. They have to be, but they also have an aesthetic sense, and the values of kindness. I noticed in Kyoto that little kids were able to travel by themselves on the subway. Mm. Try that in this country. In Kyoto, you see that the surrounding hills don't have any lights on at night. Mm. Well, they're preserved for their parks, there's temples, there's walking trails. You're not going to see roads and houses up there.
Right. Yeah. So in our closing few minutes here, Jan, tell us a little bit more about some events that are going on. How can people connect in with Culture Change and learn more about your work on your website? Clearly, it's a very large undertaking. Just simply the name of culturechange.org bespeaks quite a lot, and really bespeaks, I think, what we all sense is necessary for us collectively here on planet Earth.
Well, give a little more background on that, but first I want to say that Eco City Builders will be putting on the 7th Global Ecological Cities Conference. And another thing coming up that I've been helping a bit on is the big one. That's a convergence that will take place in Golden Gate Park in June of 2008 on sustainability. And that will cover peak oil, health, and social justice as well. Now, it is also playing up culture change, which I was pleasantly surprised that it's doing. Are you ready for culture change? So I can certainly get behind that concept. And the derivation of that actually was after operating the Alliance for a Paving Moratorium and publishing the Auto Free Times for many years in the 90s, and we talked about peak oil and a better living through a car-free lifestyle and depaving and all that. It seemed that a culture that continues to pave over the best farmland and also is characterized by family relations having to do with stealing inheritance and things like that that I noticed in my unfortunate and dysfunctional family, that we really have to change our culture. And with the kinds of changes we're talking about, it's so deep that we will have to experience a culture change if we want to really arrive at a sustainable way of living.
Right. And there really can be nothing more important of a subject, I mean, essentially, for humanity, than embracing and moving towards a sustainable way of living, just by the sheer definition of those words.
Yes, well, it will depend on one's ecosystem, and there are still a few primitive societies out there
mm-hmm.
that have traditions going back thousands of years. And it's also important to think of the third world in general as a place that's not necessarily so impoverished as we're led to believe. Just because they don't have dishwashing machines and refrigerators and a computer and TV in every room doesn't mean that they don't have other things to recommend their way of living.
Right.
They happen to have closer families. it seems to me that every society outside this one has closer families. Their food supply is closer. So would you rather be in a place that doesn't have so many appliances and is not warming the globe so much and where people have to share cars, and they're getting their food supply mostly locally?
Talk about culture change right there. See?
It's just a culture.
That. You've heard it here.
It's parts of the culture we don't want to change. Certain cultures, the dominant culture, will change, and that's what we're about.
It is inevitable, and it's always great to have you on the show, and thanks for coming back and checking in with us and our listeners and sharing your insights, Jan. And folks can learn more about you and your work at culturechange.org. Thanks for sitting down with me today.
Thank you, Martin. It was great.
It's always great to connect with Jan Lundberg. He's a real humanitarian out there doing work on the front lines, affecting culture change, and really bringing a great message to all of us that the power to shift what's happening in our world really belongs with us in our hands. That's our core message here at Reality Sandwich, that the nature of reality can shift at any given time. All things are shifting and changing and evolving and growing, and the impetus, the seed of all change in your own life and in our environment, in our world, and all aspects of life begins with you and your personal choices and your personal orientation to how you interact with the world. And that's our intention with Reality Sandwiches, to bring you that insight, stir your mind, and hopefully affect some positive change for each and every one of us here. We're here every Thursday at noon, 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We'll be back next Thursday and over the coming weeks here at Reality Sandwich. Thanks for listening. You can get this show and all past shows at realitysandwichradio.com.
Person on earth, we all partake in the splendor of each person's joys, rebirths, the songs of dolphins, the songs of whales, and waterfalls. Street in their eyes we see. Songs of dolphins, the song.